She's the one thing that could put a smile on my face tonight. You know, I miss her. I wish she could be out of training. She's kind of that bright light that you walk up to training. Her and Mark Johnson are always there waving and saying hi. And, you know, when we found out the news that, you know, she got ill, all of us were devastated. But we know that she can stay strong and fight through it, and we're staying positive with her. And just to be able to show her any type of gratitude for what she's done for the club in terms of support, to be that loyal and be there since day one, it means a lot to us. So, you know, showing that jersey, I was trying to find it after the game. I told the kit man when I score, I'll come get it. But I think it was with C38, so couldn't find it. But, you know, we love her as a team, and we're going to try to do better for her throughout the season and hopefully get some wins for her. So hopefully they sort it so she can be watching at the hospital. But, you know, we need to make her happy with a couple wins and stuff like that. But, yeah, like I said, she's probably the one thing that can put a smile on my face tonight is just, you know, just to let her know that we're with her.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, January 15th, 2024. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I have a dream. And HTHL is here. Rapids Media Day happened, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some news. But first off, the reason why you did not get our fun intro pod music with the fun quotes and everything is because news has just come out that longtime Rapids superfan Joan Dobrinsky passed away over the weekend. And so in lieu of that, we featured audio from Cole Bassett from a match back in March after it was found out that Joan was in the hospital. And so we figured it was more fitting to respect that and to provide Cole's, you know, very human and wise perspective on that matter at the time as Joan was becoming sick with an illness that has since taken her life. Joining me now, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Mark, you are better with death and these sorts of things and everything. Joan was a wonderful human being and a light in the darkness at many a times for the Rapids. She and Mark Johnson were two of the regulars who would attend, you know, had a long streak of attending Rapids home training sessions out there at Field 20 that was only put on hold for during 2020 with COVID-19. And they were back and both of them have had illnesses and everything. But there's every club has a Joan Dobrinsky, but the Rapids only had one Joan Dobrinsky. And now this wonderful human being within our community is gone, Mark, and may her memory be a blessing.
Well said. Very Jewish of you. That's the way Jews say condolences. But Matt is of the Buddhist faith, so he is of all the wisdoms. He has learned all the things. Either that, or I've been his rabbi enough on this podcast that I've had a small impact on him. Matt always doesn't give himself enough credit. He always says, you're better at this than I am. And I'm always kind of like, actually, I don't know if that's true anymore on anything. Matt's pretty much better at everything than I am, except for maybe biblical and rabbinic Hebrew and Aramaic. I'll take the high ground. I have the high ground on those. So a couple things about Joan. One of the things that I know from working with people at the end of their life and also kind of writing about people and writing to people is tell the people you love that you love them when they are alive and tell them what they mean to you while they are alive. So make sure. And that is one of the reasons that when I found out that Joan was sick, even though I didn't know if this illness was going to be fatal, I thought it was really important to write something about what Joan means to the club. And so Matt very generously reposted that on Twitter today. The article is on our Substack. It's called Every Club Has a Joan. I'll post it again at some point, maybe on Reddit as well, and also on our Facebook.
Link to that, Mark, as well as there was a follow-up in the summer after she got better slightly. And Mark, the first game that she attended back at Dick's Sporting Goods Park was actually the 2-1 win over Dallas. Drew Moore ceremony on top of that as well. So John Babiak had a nice piece on that as well. Links to both of those articles will be in the show notes for those who want to go back down Joan Dobrinsky memory lane.
Yeah, nice. My other two Joan memories are One is cancer related, but on the other end, everybody remembers old timers, at least not that old because we haven't been with the club that long, but that when the Rapids had a center back whose mother came down with cancer, that a bunch of us got together and stood and did a special 26-minute tribute to her. That was Court Ford and his mom. And so we had a party at my house to paint two sticks. So two sticks are exactly what they sound like. You take two PVC poles and you put a banner between them. And so we were in the garage and we were painting banners, and Joan came out for that and hung out in the garage and had a couple beers, and we held up two sticks, and Joan was there to kind of put up those banners when we did that. And the club was really great about that. And that was something that me and Abby would put together when we were in charge of Burgundy Wave, yay, these many years. And then the other memory is a couple, you know, many years ago, the Rapids, I think it was either a USMNT or a Rapids game. I feel like it might have been a USMNT game, where Joan didn't have a ride, and we both live in West Wash Park. And I just mentioned, hey, I'm going, why don't I give you a ride? And so we carpooled out to a game and chatted the whole way out. And, you know, one of the great things about Joan was she could tell stories about the old days and what it was like at Mile High Stadium when the Rapids played, you know, and there were only 10,000 fans in the lower section and all that stuff. But the other thing was, you know, Joan and I, when I would see her on the sidelines at the Rapids training field, I would disagree with Lick. We would talk about something and she would go, well, I don't know about that. And then she would argue with me. And she, you know, she, which was, you know, like one of the things that's great about one of the downsides of being a Rapids media person and podcaster that Matt and I both know is that it's at some point you start to have an ego and you start to like think that your opinions are really well informed and really intellectual because you study the metrics and you interview the players and you talk directly to Fran and Porik and you get a big head. And one of the great things about Joan was she wasn't having it. Like if I told her, like, I think this player, you know, should be playing on the inside, and or I think this other player should be starting, whatever, she was like, well, I don't think so, and here's what I think. And then she would just go right at me. And I really appreciate that about her. You know, it's important as someone who's covered the team for a long time to have someone who could check you and be like, actually, young whippersnapper, I've covered the team longer than you ever have, and I've been to more trainings than you ever have, and every player on the team hugs me, and you can't say the same about yourself. And that was the other thing about Joan was, you know, if you go back and you talk to every Rapids player, probably in history, they've pretty much all gotten a hug from Joan. Like, it's a thing, you know? She would come up to players. That was my other favorite thing. It's like, there's a point Matt and I both know. This is my favorite final Joan memory before we turn it back to the rest of the podcast. But, you know, there's a point after 15 minutes into training when the Rapids director of communications would often come out to the media pool and say, okay, that's it. And because the field is actually visible from a little grass berm next to the field, you know, you would have to just literally leave. You couldn't, like, there wasn't another place to stand or whatever. But that didn't work for Mark and Joan. Mark and Joan had carte blanche to stand there forever. And when training ended, they would swing open the big gate and the players would march out. And if Joan hadn't left already, she'd give all the players a hug and she'd say hi. And, you know, she was just really, you know, beloved by fans and players and the front office alike. And there's never going to be another Joan, but we appreciated her while we had her.
She was just a really nice old lady, Mark, who loved the Rapids and was nice to most people, or at least, like, even when she disagreed with people on, you know, stuff, she'd be cordial about it. Mark Johnson, totally. With all due respect, a little bit more prickly when maybe I wrote or tweeted something that he disagreed with, but, you know, certainly well-intended with any of the criticism and including any of the criticism that she might have had of the players. You know, to your point, Mark, about how, you know, players going back 10, 15, maybe even 20 years, almost every single one of them has gotten a hug from Joan is on a first name basis with them, you know, knows, you know, Joan and Mark Johnson knew the names of their wives. They knew how many kids they had. I'd be willing to bet that, you know, if Joan was here, if Mark was here, they'd be able to recount, you know, what were the names of Mark Birch's dogs and their breeds and how old were they in 2016 and everything. You know, she'd be able to say that. You know, Stefan Aigner will have opinions about the Colorado Rapids. You would be hard pressed. If there's one person who Stefan Aigner could be like, yeah, this person was nice to me. I have nothing against them. They were great. They are the person amongst the Rapids community of whom I have no qualms with, Joan Dobrinsky would be at or near the top of, you know, that list. And so she was like, she was the grandmother, she was the grandma of the Colorado Rapids, Mark. And now we as a community don't have our meemaw. And to your point, there's not going to be another Joan Dobrinsky, and that's disappointing in that regard. You know, we as a community are hurting. I should point out to the Dobrinsky family, let me look this up, Mark, because I know that John Babiak listed the names of the family members. So I want to call them out specifically by name to let them know that we are thinking of and supportive of them. So let me scroll through. Here we go. Joan has a nephew named Ross, and at least at the time of John Babiak's publishing of the article in the summer, he had a girlfriend named Brienne. Maybe I'm not pronouncing that correctly. And then Drew Moore was also very close with them. We've mentioned Mark Johnson as well. I don't have the name of any children now that I see this, Mark. And I do not know what Joan's marital status was at the time. But in any case, to anyone who knew,
I think Joan had an ex-husband, but I don't think she had any kids. If my recollection is correct.
In any case, to the Dobrinsky family, to anyone who knew Joan, to anyone who is in pain now on behalf of her passing and everything, we hear you. We are here for you. May her memory be a blessing. And if there's anything that we can do, please feel free to reach out, you know, at Rapids96Podcast, Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. I have no idea what the setup is like for any celebration of life, but if there's anything to where you need emotional support, want people to show up and share good stories and be present in the moment in honor of Joan, or need financial assistance for that, we would be happy to, you know, send that out on our channels and let the Rapids community does what it does when a member of this community asks for help. Okay, Mark, let's pivot to a much less trivial but nonetheless geographically interesting segment of the podcast that we do on an annual basis, where, Mark, we talk about new countries in which Rapids fans have downloaded and listened to HTHL. I should point out, per the algorithm, folks, these stats are based on your location at the time that you download the podcast. So if you are on vacation in the Maldives and then still have your data collection or Wi-Fi when we post a podcast, that will download as the Maldives, even if you are based in Colorado or where have you. Technically, I don't know how advanced our pod catching out data collection process is, but in theory you could like VPN in theory if you had a VPN that allowed you to connect to a server in North Korea, we could finally get a hit in North Korea. But Mark, these are the lists of all of the countries that we had not previously gotten a download in the history of holding the Highline that we got at least one download for in the year of 2023. So first we have Bonaire, Sint Estuis, and Saba. That is all one thing. I have no idea if I pronounced that correctly. We got Moldova. We got El Salvador. I'm kind of shocked, Mark, that we didn't have all of CONCACAF wrapped up prior to 2023. Morocco and we got Tunisia. So, Mark, we are expanding on the African continent. We do not just have Ghana and where's Dombaji from off the top of my head? I can't remember. Senegal and South Africa and a few other countries as well. We got Kenya as well. We are officially in the Philippines as well, Mark, and we are in Iran. So we are expanding in the Middle East as well. I don't believe that we have a download in Pakistan or in Palestine, to be clear here, Mark. We are in Malaysia. And is there one more that we got one download for? And then we had five downloads all in this past calendar year from the United Arab Emirates. So we are expanding in that regard, Mark. And for listeners who are wondering, in 2020, 3. This is a really interesting, Mark. We had a shakeup in terms of our top 10 countries that we are in order of. Obviously, of course, number one, we are in the United States. More than 75% of all of our downloads globally are within the state of Colorado, but over 90% in the United States. Mark, our number one country, for our number two country for 2022 was Germany, then the United Kingdom after that. I should point out that it does not separate England, Scotland, and Wales from that. So, Mark, I would love to know if it was possible if we got a download in like the county of Wrexham. And then given the number of Scotsmen that we've had on the Rapids in the past, not so much now, I'd be curious to know how many Nicholson and Wilson and Little family members we got within that United K number, or how much of that was Jack Price family members based in England. Then Australia, Canada, Ireland. So shout out to the members of the Smith family who are listening to that. And then China, Japan, Chechnya, and Brazil. And so once again, Mark, top five, as always, we also have Australia. So shout out to the members of the Chris Sharpie family that are keeping us up there. Disappointed, Rabbi, given the international representation of the Rapids playing squad, that we did not get more numbers. So I'm hoping that Serbia can make a jump higher up on the list there as well. But Rabbi, your thoughts on our international growth and whether or not you think we are now the number one soccer podcast in Bonaire, Sint Eustatius, and Saba?
I don't know what that is. I'm still confused with it.
I'm going to Google it. Talk for a minute.
Morocco, Tunisia is very exciting, and I mean, it's just awesome to think, like, it's just awesome to think that people listen to this podcast from all over the world in any respect. So if you're in another country and you're listening to these words right now, drop us a line, send us a tweet, drop a note on the Reddit for the Colorado Rapids and just say, hey. I mean, I think it's, you know, my favorite is, and I think I have to do it tomorrow morning before I forget. Last year, the Inter-Miami Poland supporters group created a magazine in Polish for how to watch the Major League Soccer and did, you know, 28 capsules of like questions about, you know, every team and asked me to write about the Rapids for a Polish magazine. And I just thought that just tickled me that I'm like, you know, the voice of the Colorado Rapids in Polish, which is, by the way, where my grandmother is from. So, you know, kind of comes full circle in a cool way. And then, of course, I'm sure Inter Miami kind of blew up in Poland after Messi moved to that team. I don't know if that will have any impact on our listenership in Poland or how many people know who the heck I am in the greater Krakow, Warsaw, Kielce, and Szczestochow areas. But if you're listening to this podcast in Poland, my ancestors were your neighbors once upon a time. So,
Mark, I would love to. Yes, listeners, let us know where is the weirdest country or the weirdest place geographically that you have listened to us. So I should point out, Rabbi, the podcast that you would have done towards the end of 2022 when I was off gallivanting in Maine for that wedding. And then you brought in Joseph Samuelson, friend of the pod. I made my friend who I was going to the wedding with listen to it on the way down from our hike in the New England area. So probably the most interesting place that I've listened to and downloaded the podcast. I'm technically a download for Maine. So were you listening to us on vacation? Where were you doing so? And Richard Fleming, if you ever cover another North Korean national team game, if you could give us a download in Colorado so that, you know, we've expanded our geographical reach to the People's Republic of Korea, that would be certainly great. But yeah, Mark, super glad to see that we are expanding on the African continent as the African Cup of Nations is going on. Not really sure how to feel about our expansion in the Middle East as well, Mark, given how maybe some people in some of those countries might feel about listening to a podcast on where 50% of us are Jewish. But Mark, the country that I was listing earlier, the Bonaire, Sint Eustatius, and Saba are colloquially known as the Caribbean Netherlands, and so they are in the northern, like, top middle part islands of South America, and so that's where they are, and so they're nicknamed or abbreviated as the BES Islands, is their acronym. And let me see if we got a total population here on Wikipedia. We have a 2022 estimated population of around 28,000. So we got one random download on that. I have no idea if these guys have their own national team that is so crap on the, you know, down part of of CONCACAF that they're not allowed to be a part of it, or are these players, as they are technically within the Kingdom of the Netherlands during the Golden Age that was not so golden for brown people outside of white Dutch people, whether or not these players would technically be eligible for the Netherlands national team. So I don't know, maybe the maybe Virgil van Dijk's ancestors are from the Caribbean Netherlands. But in any case, for the one person who listened to Holding the High Line about this, we appreciate you. Okay, Mark, shall we get to Rapids Media Day? So listeners,
earlier today,
the Colorado Rapids officially kicked off the 2024 season. I should say they technically did it over the weekend with Player Report Day. But for the second year annually, the comms team over at DSG set up Media Day with a number of players. And unlike last year, this also included the head coach. So we spoke with Porrick Smith and Chris Armas. And then we had media availability with Keegan Rosenberry and Cole Bassett. And then two of the newer signings, Jordy Mihailovic and Zach Steffen, were together. And then Omir Fernandez was available as well. Miguel Navarro was initially scheduled to be available alongside Omir, and that he was unable to make it. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Mark, you were able to attend this for the first half. What stood out from you from what you saw from Media Day?
There was, I mean, the word was excitement. I think that was the word that Keegan Rosenberry used about the team. And my piece for tomorrow, or whenever I get around to it this week, for Backpass, for our Substack, is just kind of asking about calibrating expectation and kind of being led down the primrose path. I think one of the challenges of new player acquisitions and having a club with a lot of buzz going in is, how do we like manage our expectations going into the season? Because I think we do this to ourselves every year as both Rapids experts and Rapids fans. The club makes some signings and we go, oh, this looks great. Wow, we're going to be great this year. You know, we signed this amazing, you know, Brazilian player who is young and he's a U22. It's the first time we've ever used that. That's going to work out fantastic, right? And, you know, like, oh, you know, I think last year, you know, the only reason that there was a little bit less excitement and less expectation was it seemed like the team had been happy with their playoff performance the previous year in 2021. And it basically said, 2022, and it basically said, you know, if it ain't broke, like, we won the Western Conference, we were the best team in the conference in 2022. And so let's hold the line. Let's keep some players. We'll make a few changes around the margins and everything. And I was kind of like, I don't know, but you know, like, we'll be a playoff team, I'm sure. And that was wrong. So I think that that's hard. Like, you know, you can, one of the things I posted a couple weeks ago was, you can convince yourself, if you can convince yourself that Jordy Mihailovic is a first tier MLS player and an all-star caliber player, then this team looks playoff bound for sure. But that's a lot to put on one guy. Zach Steffen, you know, is going to have an impact, but he doesn't score goals. He is a goalkeeper. So anyways, that was, I think I was blessed with the fact that before I had to go back to work, I was able to see Oric and Chris Armas. I was able to see Omir Fernandez and Cole Bassett and Keegan Rosenberry. It's lovely to see Cole and Keegan speak about the team. I think what's great about seeing them talk is that they both have the history and the background and they're beloved of the players and they can talk about what's going on in the locker room. I think the challenge of that was, though, I've already heard everything they have to say. So that's a little bit what I picked up from them. But it was really enjoyable. I mean, I felt like it is really nice to get the team at the beginning of the year when expectations are high, when energy is good. Also finding out, like, they went in, you know, to the office yesterday or on Friday or whenever they came in for the photos that were taken. And then they were mentioning, like, we're flying out to Mexico on Wednesday. I mean, this time of year is just crazy. You know, they're checking in for physicals. they announced the preseason schedule. Like, you know, I think, who was it? Somebody, I forget who was telling me that they, once upon a time, I read something where someone said, like, oh, I write about soccer. And they said, oh, you know, that's only a couple months of the year sport. What are you going to do in the off season? You know? And the answer is, like, there is no off season in soccer. Like, the European League is running opposite of the Major League Soccer season. The African Cup of Nations and the Asia Cup are running simultaneously right now. You know, the U.S. men's national team is playing every weekend when MLS is not playing. Like, there's always soccer news. And in MLS, like, we're in January. We're, like, a couple weeks from the February preseason schedule. There's going to be kit drops, signings. You know, the CONCACAF Champions League gears up early, right? There's just so much going on. The U.S. Open Cup is roaring into steam, so there's just a lot going on. So, but I didn't get to catch the back end of the conference, and I would love to hear your thoughts on that, Matt. But I would also like to hear your thoughts overall on the conference. And also, trekking out to DSG in some really bad weather today, and hanging out with the rest of the press corps. And my last question for you, Matt, that I'm throwing out, if you can remember it, is, you know, and this is going to be dorky and inside baseball for us, but, like, you are also putting together an all new team of the press corps. What was it like to be in the press room with some unfamiliar faces and some old friends?
Oh, there weren't that many unfamiliar faces. There's maybe people who weren't normally, where that's not normally an event that they would attend to. They stick to match day coverage, but it was wonderful in that regard. But yeah, to your point, Mark, you know, I woke up, I took Friday off. I went skiing at Breckenridge and it was cold as dirt. And then I went actually with a relatively new friend for the first time, them skiing, coming back from a ACL injury, Mark. So we took it kind of slow at A Basin on Saturday, and there was so much wind that only the Black Mountain lift was running. So it was, you know, four runs, two greens, plenty of powder throughout. I'm kind of glad, even though there was way more powder on Sunday and on today, Mark, I-70 looked like just an absolute carnage from I-70 things on Instagram and everything, and Chris Bianchi, you know, just absolutely putting the fear of God into anyone who thought about going out in the car. So the fact that I only had
to,
like,
not drive. Yeah.
So the fact that, Mark, you know, I had to go a little bit up one of the artery roads surrounding downtown where I live that was relatively unoccupied. And, you know, as long as you didn't get stuck too close to a truck and everything, you know, I-70 was nice enough to me. As some listeners will remember, my 2014 Blue Prius C Phoebe was basically in the winter equivalent of Mad Max a few years ago in a snowpocalypse situation, where Joseph Samuelson and his wife and I went to Keystone and we had to put the chains on it. And I basically went down the hill at 30 miles an hour, passing spinned out Subarus and trucks with chains and everything. So I'm a really good driver for having two wheel drive in ways that I hope that Chris Armas is a better coach, given the fact that he's got a two wheel drive car in a league where there's a lot of four wheel drive and a lot of chains and tires with, and a lot of snow tires. But yeah, it was cold as butt. It was 0 degrees Fahrenheit when I got there, Mark, and then it was -3 at Commerce City when I came in and everything. I thought I was getting frostbite just to take off my glove to pull out my phone and take a picture outside of the stadium and everything. And it was absolutely picturesque at the stadium, Mark. The temperature notwithstanding, I don't think the amount of snow was enough to wear. I think with enough heads up, you know, 48 hours notice that there was going to be a game, that Snow Classico 5 could have taken place today at Dick's Sporting Goods Park if they wanted to. I think the weather would have been grounds to postpone it, Mark. We were definitely below the temperatures at that Toronto FC game, so C38 fans would have been without beer, certainly. The Coors Light and the special brew certainly would have been frozen taps, so you're relying on cans in Dale's Pub that hopefully haven't burst from freezing. But yeah, it was freezing. It was nice and warm once we were actually in the Summit Club on the second floor and everything, so that was nice and taken care of. Had a nice little exchange with Jordy Mihailovic, Mark, where I mentioned to him that Montreal is worst on average, and he said, no, this is way colder and everything. So certainly some players got some shock to that regard, but if it helps the new recruits be aware that, hey, this might happen when we get that home opener, you know, in early March or anything, they'll be better for it. big picture things that I want to take away from Rabbi that were just confirmed on this. First of all, we already know that Kamani Stewart-Baines, the GA forward out of Maryland, is with the team. He was one of the two Generation Adidas players from the Super Draft. His contract is guaranteed for 2024. He was always coming out of school and joining the club, but Wayne Frederick, the midfielder slash defender for Duke University, is with the team in preseason, as is center back Nate Jones from the University of Washington. UW, shout out to the Huskies for a friend of the show, Jason Maxwell. Nate Jones absolutely has that dog in him. So, Mark, from my understanding on the rules, and I wasn't able to get this confirmed from the club, but I believe this is what was said during the Super Draft broadcast by players simply joining their team for preseason. That is them foregoing future eligibility. So Wayne Frederick, I believe, is a sophomore, and then Nate Jones is a junior. I believe they are done with college eligibility. And in that regard, Rabbi, they are all in on showing up to preseason, balling out, and earning a contract. The Rapids do have, as they drafted them, have their eligibility for 2 years. So in theory, Rabbi, based on either numbers from a squad standpoint or based on their performance, in theory, the Rapids could sign them to next pro contract, either for a year or 2 years, and then sign them to MLS deals, and other MLS teams can't come and poach them in that time. So that's a possibility. Mark, we both asked about decisions that Chris Armas was making. The club has not selected a captain yet, but based on what was said in the press conference, particularly my question about leadership and vocalness and everything, Mark, we're full on Keegan Rosenberry for the we're full Captain Keegan, right?
That's the inside pick. The dark horse pick is Cole Bassett, but I agree. The obvious pick is Keegan Rosenberry.
Yeah,
which to some degree is why I asked the question. I kind of thought, like, maybe I'll break some news. But one of the things I've learned is you never break any news at a press conference. You never get to be the one who... They usually walk in there and they're like, we'll announce it on our timeline when we've created the proper video backdrop experience for the whole thing and added the rising music or Drake in the background or whatever they're going to pick. So, and I got nothing against it. I totally get how the club operates. They want to be a classy operation. They don't want some Dingleberry rabbi in Pittsburgh to be the one who breaks the big news.
Yeah, so no captain just yet, Mark, but I think Keegan would be an excellent shout. I think certainly Cole would understand. It would mean something to Cole to have that, and I think that would elevate him. Certainly, if I'm just handicapping who the other two maybe favorites for that, Andreas Maxo, who wore the armband at times last year, and then Connor Ronan as well, kind of filling that similar Jack Price midfielder role. If it is not one of those four, Mark, I will be very surprised, and I will have not follow-up questions that I'm doubting the decision, but I will be curious to know, you know, if Calvin Harris is the next captain of the Colorado Rapids, I would love to know in detail every single thing that Chris Armas thought that led to choosing Calvin as the next captain. So no captain. We also do not yet know they're not finalizing the coaching staff just yet. All of the assistants that were with Robin Fraser got extensions this time last year through 2025. I do not know what their buyout situations were, but Mark, we've seen and heard that particularly Chris Little and Neil Emblem are certainly around the club, and Zach Steffen called out Chris Sharpie as well, unprompted as well. So I have to assume that Zach Steffen is under the impression that Chris Sharpie will be his goalkeeper coach. And it was the one thing that we did get from Chris Armas on that is that Ian Sarakin has joined as an assistant. Mark, listeners, if that name sounds familiar, that is because Ian Sarakin is the son of Dave Sarakin, longtime Bruce Arena assistant, at one point interim head coach for the United States men's national team.
I was wondering that. It was my assumption. Good job, Matt.
Yes. And so he is joining that. He previously was an assistant at Creighton, and then he has experience coaching at the youth levels, like U14 to U17, both with U.S. soccer and then within the LA Galaxy Academy. That, Mark, would have been at the time that Dave Sarakin would have been with the first team alongside Bruce Arena back like 2014 era as well. He played college at Illinois Chicago, didn't do a whole lot from a professional player standpoint as well. So we'll see about the rest of the assistants, Mark. Other things that stand out, I mean, by now, listeners, you've probably seen on social the various quotes that have gone viral. You can see, you know, my recap where I kind of highlight some of those. So I won't necessarily go through all those quotes. I would encourage you to go back and listen to the roughly hour, 45 minute-ish total of audio that we received from that, Mark. But I did kind of poke Chris Armas on his thoughts on the U.S. Open Cup situation. And he emphatically said that, you know, if the club is is in a competition for a trophy. He wants to win it, and he felt that clubs should be given the option to clubs should be given the choice how they want to go about going through the competition. And some teams, as you've seen in the past, unofficially have basically played their now next pro in previous years. We would have called it the reserve team in the Open Cup. And he wants teams that want to choose to take it seriously, something that he would do, something that New York Red Bulls did in the past, given the opportunity to take it seriously. And MLS or US Soccer shouldn't be coming down and saying, no, you are ineligible, you should be playing the reserve teams. And so that was a firm affirmation of something that I've agreed upon, that Mark, you and I have both said that we feel that Major League Soccer is out of touch in that regard. And then the other things that stand out for me, Mark, was, you know, you mentioned the stuff that Keegan mentioned about being excited, but Porik also doubled down on that, saying that, you know, this is his 10th preseason that he's been with the club, and there's a buzz and energy around that is certainly different from in the past. And in particular, Mark, I thought that Jordi Mihailovic and Zach Steffen's demeanor on the podium together was particularly amusing. There were points where questions was asked and it was implied that it was available to both of them, or ambiguous as to who was going to take it first, and they kind of exchange a giggle going back and forth. I asked a question open-ended to both of them. Zach Steffen answered it and Jordi didn't have anything to say. And I said, you know, Jordi, do you have anything to add? And he was like, no, Zach Steffen said it perfectly. And they were kind of giggling back and forth with each other. So the two of them had almost like vibes of two besties who just came back from vacation for winter break, and they're sitting on the bus together after their Christmas break and everything, and they're just so excited to be back together, even though school is back in session. And so if that's the energy they feel towards each other, USMNT connection, playing unsuccessfully in Europe, maybe as well, I'm here for that. And absolutely, Mark, a connection that immediately Jonathan Tannenwald made via the Zoom link connecting Keegan Rosenberry to Zach Steffen. They spent some time with the national team together, Jordi, him, and Keegan, and then Cole also with Jordi as well. And then also, I was not aware of this, Mark, but where Zach Steffen is originally from is actually close enough to Philadelphia to where the two of them knew each other previously in like the club scene there, and then also in and around the Union Academy youth development as well. So there's an alternate universe rabbi where Zach Steffen and Keegan Rosenberry are both homegrowns with the Philadelphia Union and, you know, coming up together in the same way that Sam Vines and Cole Bassett did as well. So if that's a connection that helps the club defensively, that, you know, the right back, possible captain of the club, and the goalkeeper know each other and are familiar with each other, and then combine that with Cole and Jordi having a connection as well, certainly very interesting there. And Zach Steffen, I asked straight up how his knee is doing. He said that it's totally fine. He's ready to go for preseason. So there was kind of some ambiguity, Mark, about how much training he was doing with Man City as a player who was on the outs, but done with his timeline from the knee surgery from this past summer, which was described as to repair long-standing wear and tear, but not an MCL, not an ACL, not an actual break. And so the timeline for that was 3 to 4 months. That prevented him from getting a loan to a championship or a Luton Town this past August, September. And so here he is now in MLS, but he feels good to go. And if Marquis's ready to go, no limitations for preseason, it seems pretty darn close to healthy. That's way better from where we were this time last year. Mark, other than the absence of Miguel Navarro, who we will talk about when we get to Sam Vines, is there anything else that we want to talk about Rapids Media Day-wise?
I mean, it sounded like you had a day. You had a good experience out there, and I thought the club answered its questions as well as it could, and they put on a good show. I'm glad things sounded like they went well, and a lot of the answers were not so massaged. They were solid answers.
Last thing that I will say on this, Mark, just to make sure that we cover our bases regarding the two drafted players. If Jones and Frederick sign first team deals, listeners, that would take the roster total to 29. And then it's not counting Sam Vines, who, as we'll get to in a minute, Mark, I am under the impression is going to be officially announced within the next 48 hours at times of recording. There's a possibility he's official by the time that you are listening to this. So, Mark, that would make it a full 30-man roster at this point. So there's a few things that could be going on here. First of those is whether or not Frederick and Jones are up to it with the first team to where maybe they sign next pro deals at least for 2024. And the other question that we have, Mark, is whether or not we're going to see any more exits. Spoke with a few people in and around the media day today on and off the record, and my sense is that there are still going to be some departures. Mark Jonathan Lewis is still kind of hanging out there from my reporting earlier. And the other one that kind of sticks up to me, Rabbi, and I'd ask this question of you, Lalas Abubakar, club brings in, you know, they draft a center back. We like Mois. We like Andreas Maxo. And Lalas has been there a while, and he wasn't particularly great. He hasn't been great for, I'd say, arguably 2 years now. You know, would now be a good time to potentially part ways if they can get him a soft landing spot. But then doing that, given his contract situation, I'm wondering if he's almost going to be in like this limbo situation, similar to what Beta, Danny Wilson, Brian Acosta were this time last year.
It's a great question. It is hard to know. And it's always, you know, the question of like, can they be offloaded for value? What can they get? I feel like, and I could be really wrong on this, that Abubakar still has value. I also think that rumors of his demise are greatly exaggerated, in the sense that I think he's still a guy who will be in the rotation at center back and can do a job. I think a similar experience for me was pronouncing last year and probably the year before that Danny Wilson wasn't going to get too many reps, that he was kind of cooked and he wasn't going to play much anymore. And Danny Wilson played most of the reps at center back for at least the first half of last season. And remember, Mois Bombito, he started games at right back. He started games at left back. They played him in the middle less than they did at fullback at the beginning, because Danny Wilson and Lalas Abubakar were healthy. Andreas Maxo missed a couple games. And so there was kind of a three-player rotation with them. I feel like that's kind of the center back situation that we go into this year, where it's likely going to be Maxo and Abubakar, along with Bombito and possibly Nate Jones. And I also think that, assuming that a guy, Horik Smith, one of my favorite lines from the press conference today, was saying, Nate Jones is a beast. You don't realize how big a guy he is until he walks into the locker room and he's just this, you know, huge hulk of a man, I believe. I'm paraphrasing to some degree, but there's a lot of excitement around the club for Nate Jones, but they haven't gone through training or preseason yet. You know, these players have to show up and do the job and see how they look. So I think Lalas Abubakar is still very valuable. And I think the other thing that's interesting about Lalas is that he is now kind of a more experienced and senior player. He's going to be playing a role that Danny Wilson was playing in the past, where he is kind of experienced and solid. You know, Lalas's biggest qualities as a player are his clearance ability and his heading ability, and his offensive ability in the free kick and corner kick situations, where he can post guys up, he can head a ball home, and he can also come around the edge of the stack on a free kick and do big things. So I don't think Lalas Abubakar is done with this team. And I think if the Rapids did part ways with him, which is possible, that basically assumes that Mois Bombito is ready to start games for the Colorado Rapids, and that they feel good about their center back depth at backup, right? The guys like Michael Edwards are ready to fill in if they need him to. And I just don't think that that's the case. The guy who I have been kind of confused about for a while is Abubakar Keita, who has been kind of, you know, AWOL and gone forever. So I think that he's probably the lowest kind of rung on the totem pole, that Keita has been in a position for, you know, 2 years now where development hasn't happened. You know, help recovery from injury hasn't happened, and it's probably likely that they might want to move on from him. Keita's only 23 and 240 days as of the other day, whereas Lalas Abubakar is 29 years old. So the ages on those two guys are different.
Yeah, I do think, given that, you know, we're fairly confident, Mark, that Chris Armas is going to play with a back four, I do think he has a really interesting question of what they do at the center back position, because you've got a couple of young guys who, albeit with Robin Fraser, where Robin leaned on the veterans outside of Austin Trusty for large stretches at the center back position in his tenure, you have guys who've been with Rapids too. And so if You know, if preseason, you know, comes to a close and then they're coming back to Colorado for, you know, that first game against Portland at Portland, and they're saying, you know, okay, like our top three right now are Lawless, Andres, and Moise, then like once again you're saying to Buba and to Mike Edwards, like, you guys are going to start on the bench, and you're probably then, if you don't get in on the Saturday, then you're going to hang around for the Sunday game again for starting with Rapids 2. And that's what they've been doing for 2 years now. And so how he fits that in given the options that you have, I'm not entirely sure. And maybe that's where there's another move to be had, because, you know, if Nate Jones signs, Mark, then you're talking about Boubacar Keita, Moise Bombito, Andreas Maxo, Lawless Aboubakar, Nate Jones, Mike Edwards. You're talking six center backs. That's six guys for two spots, three at most on a regular that are going to play in any individual game. And somebody is going to be told to go back to R2. And there's three guys who I think would say that they're better than that. Or if that's how you feel about me, get me somewhere else where I can actually get first team minutes. It's a good problem for Armas to have. So moving on, Mark, it broke over the weekend. I took a call from the A-frame eating breakfast at Arapahoe Basin. Then I tweeted it from the lift, and then it blew up while I was doing my run. The Colorado Rapids are looking to bring Sam Vines back to the club. My understanding, Mark, is that he is arriving late tonight at time of recording. There's a possibility he has already arrived at, you know, snowy and frigid DIA. He's going to do a medical, and then he is coming back. This will be a permanent transfer fee situation, TBD, but likely non-zero, and contract situation, we will see. But Sam Vines is, per transfer market, he is 24 years old. He will be 25 on Memorial Day, May 31st, and he's coming back from Royal Antwerp, Mark, after what I thought was a really good start for him, and then unfortunately some issues with injuries at times that were bad, and then a really bad kerfuffle this past fall. So just to abbreviate it, folks, you know, he shows up for preseason, and then in early September of 2021, after leaving the Colorado Rapids, June, July of that year, he breaks his collarbone. And then so it takes him a while to get used to the Belgian league and then also break in with the team. And then he's absolutely flying to start the 2022-2023 season. And then he breaks his tibia, and then he's out for the better part of 5 months. Doesn't really get into the team at the end of 2023 that sees them finish near the top of the Jupiter Pro League. They win a cup competition. They get into Champions League as well. And then he comes in feeling really, really good for preseason and everything, Mark. Looks like that he's actually going to be competing for the starting role. And then I have heard that it was not exactly a clerical error, or that's the public excuse. In any case, Mark, he was omitted from Antwerp's Champions League squad. Antwerp ends up finishing last. I don't think that they won a game. I think they might have gotten one draw in there, but they get smashed by Barcelona. They lose. I think Shakhtar Donetsk was in their group as well. So that was a chance, Mark, for Sam Vines to play in Champions League, which is a pretty dang big deal at Royal Antwerp, and given his prospects for the national team. So he had some good moments, Mark. There were some injuries that came in at bad times as well. I've spoken to one source with European connections that effectively this was a good time of hey, things haven't really worked out. Like, we don't hate you, but at the same time, you're not in favor right now. Whatever happened with Champions League happened. He didn't get an explanation. So maybe he's thinking okay, if you're going to do that to me, that shows me that you don't particularly value me, and that it didn't work out, Mark. It's not necessarily anybody's fault, but at the same time, regardless of timing or anything, you know, this is like the breakup, Rabbi, where it's coming as one of you is going through a career change, and then they get the perfect dream job back home, and it's we don't hate each other. This isn't going to be a bitter breakup, but it's convenient and it allows us to do it without it starting to get ugly, where it could get ugly and the relationship has been flawed for long stretches, even though it very easily could have worked if three or four other things happened differently. In any case, Mark, I'm under the impression that the deal is going to be close to done. Sam Vines will be coming back to the Colorado Rapids, possibly for a transfer fee. I'm going to assume, similar to the other deals that Porik has made this offseason, that they are going to do it with a lengthened tenure that honors the player, the value that they think Sam Vines is bringing monetarily to the Colorado Rapids, but also puts them in position to where they have control of his future, such that should he get it right, get back in with the national team, absolutely crush it for the Rapids, and Europe comes back and is calling, that the Rapids will have control of that and be compensated appropriately, just like they did in parting ways with Sam back in 2021, getting reportedly $2 million and then reportedly a 50% sell-on clause. But Mark, how excited are you to have the Vines back in Colorado?
I am pretty excited. I mean, I think the interesting, so the big, one of the biggest holes this team had was left back. It was a questionable position. One of the things that folks thought was that Miguel Navarro was acquired to fill that hole and that he was good enough from Chicago Fire to do the job. I talked to folks at the Fire and they made it sound like he had some big holes in his game. You know, the thing that, when they talked about what they saw in Miguel the last 2 years, what I think that it most reminded me of was the things that we saw in Lalo Sabubakar, where he could have a game where he was just rock steady, absolutely solid on the back line, and then another game, a couple games later, where he would kick out, you know, cause a PK and put the team, you know, in a bad position early in the game, because he made a poorly timed sliding tackle when probably a stand-up tackle would have just been fine at that situation. That was the book on Miguel. And so I thought to myself, boy, that and Alex Gersbach with maybe Sebastian Anderson as your alternative. Sebastian has played a little of left back, although he's primarily a right back. It just didn't feel very comfortable to me. Jasper Lofelson can also play as an inverted right-footed, primarily like right-footed left back, but you don't bring him in for that after he's spent the last year and a half playing for RSL as a center back. So as a defensive midfielder. So the question was like, what are we doing at left back? Like, that's the one position of need other than maybe backup striker that this team definitely has. And the answer was F if I know, man, like, who knows what we're going to do. And then the rumor comes, hits you from you. Amazing work, Matt. From a lift, which is remarkable. Go ahead, Matt.
Should point out, dear listeners, technically, Braden Norris, new beat reporter for the Denver Post, covering true. The Colorado Rapids, had
it first.
And also DNVR were on it. So despite Tom Bogert, as much as I appreciate him acknowledging that Burgundy Wave was on it, and then other outlets actually giving first credit to Burgundy Wave, technically it was the Post that had it first. In any case, good reporting by all, good news and insight and everything. And the fact that I'm breaking news, Mark, on my Saturday day off on a powder day and everything, like I appreciate Porrick Smith cooking. Can you please take one day off so that I can just have fun in the mountains? In any case.
When I broke the news about a coach getting fired, I was eating tacos, you know, in a taqueria on my day off here in Pittsburgh. So I know
this is why you subscribe to Holding the Highline, folks. Even we're gonna get a scoop when we're sleeping. I am going to sleep tweet the next breaking news, Mark, about the number six the Rapids are signing later this week at 2 a.m. You're welcome.
We don't skip leg day at Holding the Highline. We are constantly on, baby. But yeah, so I didn't really answer your question. I just gave a long-winded wind-up, which is I'm excited to have Sam Vines back. I think he's really a big solution for this team. I have slight worries about the fact that there's a lot of rust to shake off. He had a broken leg. He came back from the broken leg. Royal Antwerp kind of gave him a raw deal. Me and you were both kind of keeping up with the every lineup that Royal Antwerp was turning in from August till now. And he was like, and also we were communicating regularly with Richard Fleming, who is, shall we say, very interested in following the Sam Vines career path. And so he's been really, we all three of us have been kind of paying attention to the fact that he was in a three-man rotation at left back, and he wasn't the de facto starter in the Belgian league for a very good team, but like that makes his USMNT profile really low. So he's been in a weird spot, and I think it's not great to come back to MLS in that position. I think the best comp that I can mention of any other player is Matt Miazga. Matt Miazga brought over from Chelsea then sent out on loan to two different teams over two or three different seasons. Kind of didn't make a lot of waves, fell out of favor with the USMNT, although he was mostly healthy, and then came back to America, and people were like, oh yeah, Matt Miazga, he was the guy, I forgot about him. And he did prove it. He had a very good season this last year in MLS. So that's, I think, the hope that we have for Sam Bynes, that he comes in. The other thing that's great about Sam coming into the Rapids right now is he comes in with a bunch of guys who are just like him, fringe USMNT players with a lot to prove, who know each other. And that's Zach Steffen and Georgi Mihailovic and Cole Bassett. I mean, that is these are four guys who know each other from USMNT camp. Sam and Cole know each other since they were little kids, literally, both Rapids Academy project prospects. And I think the best thing, the last thing I'll say about Sam Bynes is Rapids fans love a Sam Bynes. They love them some Sam Bynes. I mean, the reality is, you know, people from Colorado Springs will drive up and root for him. I love his story. He gave me one of the best interviews for one of my favorite articles I ever wrote, which is called From Pirate to Pro, which was about what it was like growing up in a youth academy and the important things that he learned. He was really honest. I love Sam Bynes. Absolutely. I'm a stan 100% because Sam is, he plays the game really well, and he has a huge hunger. He came up, when he didn't have, and one of the things he told me in the interview was, he came up with the club. He didn't have any money. The club that he played for down in Colorado Springs took care of his coaching fees, and he didn't pay a dime for coaching and for playing, you know, club soccer, which is an awesome story. And now he's making six figs in pro soccer and is on the USMNT radar. I mean, he's just the best. He's a really, really good guy, too. So a good character guy for the locker room, a talented player. He's got a chip on his shoulder, a lot to prove. If he can stay healthy and the rest of the team can feed him, this could be a really good year for these Rapids.
I remember the thing, Mark, the last thing that I forgot to mention when it came to Rapids Media Day. Mitch Carroll from DNVR Rapids asked about a concept that that Rapids social media fans have come up with, which is Something to Prove FC, Mark, which maybe is the new branding or the pivot from Revenge of the Distressed Assets FC that we came up with back in the day. Yeah. So Something to Prove FC, because you look at Chris Armas comes in, he has something to prove. He's had, you know, four straight coaching jobs that haven't gone particularly well. You've got now three guys, one previously with connections to Colorado, coming back from European stints that didn't particularly go well. They want to get back in the national team. They have proven that they are very good players when it comes to Major League Soccer. So they've got something to prove. And this club collectively has something to prove that, you know, that they are not a poverty franchise and they are better than what 2023 was, certainly. And so I think Sam Bynes, to your point, Rabbi, is lumped in perfectly with that group, with Jordy, with Zach, less so with Omir, because I think he was good at Red Bulls. He just hasn't. He's young enough to where he hasn't achieved that potential. So maybe he has something to prove, but not in a people are doubting him or are implying that he is washed in ways that I think people could say that of Zach Steffen and some of the other players, and even Cole Bassett as well, who also had a European stint, but it didn't work out and he came back after a year. So now he's back with the club for a second season in a row. So all of those things are certainly interesting. And for those who don't know, like, Sam Bynes was one of the best and most dynamic left backs in club history. I'd be willing to say, in terms of like top end talent, he's one of the better ones. I will include a link to Rabbi's Substack article detailing the Bynes back position, about what he did as a wide player that then comes into the middle to help with pressing and the buildup as they then transition into the final third, and then how he was weaponized then going back out wide. This is going to be a terrible. I want to be clear, he is not on this level tactically, but if you look at the equivalent to what John Stones was doing for Manchester City, and like there is a center back that is doing something that had never been seen before in the Premier League, and we didn't think that there was another center back in the Premier League who could do what John Stones was doing last year in terms of starting at the back in possession to then the three different positions that they played as Manchester City played forward. Sam Bynes was doing that similarly, to the point where Rabbi and HTH, you know, coined a new position because we had never seen this before in MLS, and we did not think there was another player in MLS on a team that could execute this and execute this well. And this led to Sam Vines being an absolute terror on the wide and absolutely hunting teams and owning that flank in all three phases during that stretch in 2021 that led to the success of that 2021 season, in spite of Sam Vines only being with the team for half a year. If we get 2021 Sam Vines, Mark, like the ceiling that this team could be a could have home field advantage absolutely in that round of three in the playoffs.
Yeah, the only I'm not gonna disagree with you in telling our listeners how brilliant I am and how incisive I am. But I will, which was a few people when I came up with the idea of the Vines back and basically kind of said, nobody's ever played the position like this. A few people argued and when they were like, Ryan Hollingshead plays left back like that. And the only beef that I have with that is it was a good shout. Ryan Hollingshead is a fantastic left back and can play a few other positions. And he comes inside. Ryan Hollingshead likes to play in quote unquote the channel, or AKA the half spaces that Jordan Angeli likes to talk about. But the the difference is that Vines would come all the way in to kind of the middle. He wasn't in the half spaces. He was in the spaces, right? He was in a position where a defensive midfielder would usually pop up, or even a number eight would run the point kind of like at the top of the circle. He would do that on occasion. The only question I have to finish the thought is, how is Chris Armas going to set up the offense around him? Or is Chris Armas going to turn to him a little bit like Royal Antwerp did and say, kid, dial it back a little. We've got a plan. We'd like you to play more here and here instead of there and there and there and there. So, you know, that's just what good players do and good managers do, which is they figure out how to adapt to what they need to do. Sam Vines is not Lionel Messi. He does not walk into a team and make all 10 players adjust around him and the coach, right? The coach will have to give him some direction. But hopefully Armas will understand what to do with him. And I think Sam is incredibly capable in multiple ways. He can defend and he can attack and he can move forward and he's got speed and he's got Brian Crookham once said when I interviewed him about Sam when he was young, you know, what's the story on Sam Vines? And he said, he's probably the best pure dead ball hitter and best pure crosser that I've ever coached from the Rapids Academy. And that was an incredible thing to say, that like he can hit the cross on a dead run really, really well. Incredibly valuable.
I agree with you, Mark, to where I am curious to see, given previous statements that have been made by Chris Armas and moves made by the club around what they are looking for in terms of their fullbacks, what this means for Sam Vines, who is really at his best or at his most useful and unique when he is really an attacking fullback. He is an inverted fullback, to your point, Mark, of the starting out wide in a defensive shape in a back four or back five when the Rapids had a back three in 2021, almost becoming a midfielder to create an overload and then springing out of that to then provide wide service into the box as well. And that, from what we've seen and heard, is not necessarily something that Chris Armas was looking at. And that made sense, those statements, Mark, about Armas's ideology and thoughts tactically about his fullbacks made sense when you look at the now only part of the picture, not the end of the story in terms of this roster build and this offseason of getting rid of Andrew Gutman and bringing in Miguel Navarro, who seems to be tactically a better fit, to then now bringing in Sam Vines. So what Chris Armas does with this, again, good problem to have. Curious to see what he does tactically given his history and his pedigree. Second thing that I'll say, Mark, is I've said this a few times, but regardless of the fact that some of this could have been bad timing with Sam Vines or the coach potentially trying to force him out, or really like the coach forcing Sam Vines to want to be out in the breakup by it potentially not being a clerical error that led to him being omitted from the Champions League squad. You know, I do have to, I increasingly now will not trust the public podium PR answer that I get from anyone at the club regarding any of the homegrowns, because we've now seen, and again, this is not exclusively on them, but we've seen Kolbasic go to Europe and it have not work out, and him return to the soft landing spot that is the Colorado Rapids. We are now likely to see Sam Vines do the exact same thing in 36, 48 hours officially. And then you combine that with there still being some doubts about what Sebastian Anderson and Ollie LaRoz can bring to the first team. And then on top of that, you have all of the years and years mark of official statements that we got from Porrick Smith and Brian Crookham and Chris Cartledge and Chris Sharpie about what they thought Abe Rodriguez could do. And he gets one appearance and he hasn't hit his growth spurt and he's still only 5'8". And it's, yep, we're moving on. And good luck to him in the USL Championship or League One or the second division being a backup in Mexico. And so to say nothing, Mark, of the potential that I believe that Edin Bodrie has, given what we've seen from him from the national team, I'm now going to more trust what people say to me when the cameras are not rolling or when it's just me talking to them in a room quietly and they know that the specifics of that or them being quotable and that statement being attached to their name is not something that is going to leave that room. That being said, I still think the academy is having successes, and fundamentally the first job of the academy is to produce players that are capable of contributing to the first team. We absolutely know Sam Vines and Cole Bassett are starters on the first team. TBD on Ollie LaRoz and Sebastian Anderson. At the worst, I think they should be in the match day roster. TBD on Edin Bodrie, I think, is going to crush it with Rapids 2, regardless of how good or bad Rapids 2 is. But this notion, Mark, that the Rapids were in that next tier about to break into what Philadelphia Union, FC Dallas, maybe even New York Red Bulls are doing from an academy standpoint, I think we can officially say that that has to be put on hold given what has happened with the homegrowns who've been at the club and the ones who have left and have since come back. Last thing that we have to say, Mark, I think it's a valid question what happens to Miguel Navarro at this point, who I think was assuming that with Gutman leaving and Alex Gershback and Sebastian Anderson being there and Steven Betisher retiring, that he was under the impression that he was going to come in and be the starter, and that was going to be him being fit at altitude, which was going to fit in perfectly to Venezuela being at the Copa America hosted in the United States, where he is again playing. And Mark, I was told not to read into Miguel Navarro's late scratch from media day saying that he couldn't be made available. And Mark, I think it's perfectly reasonable that maybe he had car trouble or travel trouble with the weather coming in. At the same time, he spent the last, what, 3-4 years in Chicago. He should know how to drive in snow and ice and cold temperatures at this point. Or did he see the news break over the weekend that Sam Vines is coming back, homegrown kid, coming back to the club and everything, knowing how much local kids staying at the club is important in MLS? And did he call his agent and say, talk to the club, if I'm not going to be a starter, get me out of here and I'm not reporting for preseason, I'm going somewhere where I can play because I need to be in that Copa America squad starting for Venezuela? All of these are questions, Mark, that I realize are me speculating, but again, based on how we broke down the Andrew Gutman trade effectively by Rapids math, Rapids Freakonomics logic that we would see Porrick Smith apply, Miguel Navarro was now effectively a free transfer. Could he play enough? Could they platoon it enough in the early part of the season with fixture congestion and all the Wednesday games to where Navarro is fit enough? He goes off to Copa America. He crushes it with Copa America and the Rapids sell him to Europe, to a Brazilian team, to an Argentinian team, and then make a nice little profit on that. And then it's Sam Vines, you know, 90 times 34 the rest of the way, I think are all good questions. But I'm smelling something when I see that Miguel Navarro is a late scratch and we're told about that the morning of 48 hours after the Sam Vines news is broke. Do I particularly care, Mark? No, because we love Sam Vines and we love Sam Vines more than we like a guy who the Rapids just picked up, who the Chicago Fire were like, yeah, good riddance. Rabbi, let's move on to preseason news that we heard about from the Colorado Rapids. And I don't have that in front of me because I'm a bad podcaster. But we do know, Mark, that the Colorado Rapids will once again be in Mexico. They'll be in Querétaro, where there will be nice weather, and they'll be training at altitude, something they did last year. And then similarly, they will once again be going to Orlando, Florida. So here we have, Mark, it was the report date was this past weekend, January 12th. They'll be heading to Mexico tentatively on the 17th, and they will be playing friendlies on January 23rd and 29th, and then on February 2nd. The Rapids will return to Colorado and then head to Orlando on February 9th. Where on the 10th, they will play CF Montreal. On the 14th, they will play Hartford Athletic. Mark, do you know who the Hartford Athletic new head coach is by chance?
No.
Brendan Burke, former Colorado Springs Switchbacks head coach. So there's a connection there. And then on the 17th, they'll be playing Orlando City. I assume that will be in Exploria Stadium, not on some training pitch somewhere. And then the three friendlies, Mark, that they have against Mexican teams are against Atletico Morelia, which is in the second division, Querétaro, standard Liga MX first division team. Rapids fans should know that name. And then Atlante FC as well. So, Mark, we could see some jumbling of rosters in terms of our two players and everything. So, Mark, one, thoughts on the Rapids basically copying and pasting the preseason schedule that they had for last year, which worked for training at altitude, and then also worked logistically, as now they're familiar with those settings, and given that there are a lot of other changes around the club, good to keep that the same. And then number two, frustrations or concerns that the news that we will get out of preseason will be limited due to Apple TV restraints and the Rapids only showing us game film of goals that they score and us being reliant on them giving us a filtered version of what all is going on in preseason abroad.
I understand both the reason to go to high altitude in Mexico and the idea of going to one place and playing a whole bunch of games against teams before they go and play a bunch of games against American teams. I also understand, but don't like the idea of closed door preseason. I just don't think, I think it makes sense because you can do things and not worry about how fans are going to receive it or feel about it. I think also probably it's easy to schedule those games and make those arrangements with other teams as and they won't they'll be much more comfortable saying yes if they if you promise like oh you know we'll make it closed door you know because it's good experience and whatever. I do think it's a real bummer for us as media members because we don't really get to say anything about what the team looks like. You and I will do a couple podcasts in a month or two where we report on a month and a half, a month, and we will report on what happens in a game. And the only thing we will report is what the team media flacks told us happened, which is a really usually the preseason reporting that the team provides is so-and-so scored. And occasionally they'll provide a really shaky camera angle of like one pass and one shot and one goal or whatever. And we just get no sense of how they're lining up, who's playing what position, why players start certain, get certain amount of time and others get this amount of time. Like the only way to know what's going on is usually the last two or three games of the preseason. The players who play the 60-minute first shift are the ones who are the presumptive starters on the team, but we don't really get to know much, and so it's a bummer. That's my take on the preseason announcements. What are your thoughts, Matt?
I have been pushing Mark, and I'm hoping that things are going to be a little bit different, or at least a little bit more available, or at least from a media standpoint, Mark, we'll have access to things that maybe aren't necessarily released to the public, but then we can say, here are the things that we observed. To your point, Rabbi, it's very difficult to write recaps of preseason games that were basically we're not plagiarizing what the club puts out, but basically like we're rephrasing what they say in order to try and comprehensively cover that. And in lieu of that, we basically have to say like, well, we only get a minute highlight and it's only goals scored and we got a starting lineup and when substitutions happen. So we can pontificate about the depth chart that's going on, but we can't actually talk about the actual games, which is something that the fan bases normally are starving for. And so we either have to fake knowing something based on the same information that's made public that the club is putting out, or we have to admit that we don't know anything. And then what do we do from a content standpoint other than talk about the roster builder, do some other things? So it's a difficult situation that we're in. We're going to try and do our best, fans. And I do think that the media situation around the club has been improving, and we're going to very tactfully remind the club of this problem statement, and maybe they'll work with us a little bit better in ways that they have in the past, at no fault of the comm staff, who obviously have limitations and bosses and things to be accountable for in that regard. Mark, anything else that we want to talk about when it comes to preseason, or should we get to Ask HTHLs?
Moving on.
Okay. We've had a few questions, Mark, about the number six position. I will get to that in a minute. But first, Luke Beasley asks, could we get a recap of how long each of the new signings' contracts are? Can we expect the new guys to stick around a few seasons? Around a few seasons if all goes well. So here's just a quick recap, folks. And the ways that I'm going to do this is the first number is the number of guaranteed years, and then the second number is the number of team options. So if Mark Goodman was on a two-year guaranteed contract for the Rapids with a one-year option, so guaranteed for 2024 and 2025, and then team option for 2026, I would describe Goodman's contract as a 2+1. So Omir Fernandez signed as a free agent from New York Red Bulls. He's on a 3+1, so guaranteed through 2026, team option through 2027. Zach Steffen is on the exact same, a 3+1. Jordy Mihailovic is on a 4+1. Will Bassett's extension is on a 4+0, so guaranteed through 2027. No team options. Adam Beaudry is on a 4+2, so team options for 28 and 29. And Jasper Lofelsen is still on the original contract that he signed with Real Salt Lake. That was an option year for 2024 that RSL picked up back earlier on in the offseason, so he is effectively on a 1+1 guaranteed for 24. Rapids have a team option for 2025. And then obviously any news that's happening as far as Sam Vines' contract will be announced when the club signs with him. Rabbi, I have reached out to, we have not gotten publicly on the record what is going on with Kamani Stewart-Baines, who is a GA player that the Rapids selected. The details of what each GA contract isn't always the same from year to year. And sometimes it's guaranteed GA contract for 1 year, but then beyond that, the club that actually drafts them assigns that. So that's probably already been sorted. It just hasn't been publicized. I will reveal that when we get information on that. But so in terms of guys coming back, Luke Beasley, I think on some level, like the extension for Cole Bassett and the moves that came in and bringing Sam Vines back and what I think is going to happen possibly with the number six position, we'll get to that in a minute, like is on some level Porrick Smith like retroactively acknowledging like we never should have broken up the 2021 team when we did in the first place, or at the very least we should have done a better job of replacing those players as well. I have to assume that if any of the guys leave the club at this point, it is going to be for big money to go back to Europe, and in theory that money then goes back into the first team to try and improve the first team. And the Rapids do a better job of that in ways that the Sam Vines money was poorly spent, the Kellen Acosta money was poorly spent. You could argue TBD on Mark Anthony Kay, depending on what goes on with Moise Bombito and Ralph Priso. But yeah, I want to believe that Porrick Smith has learned from his mistakes, and so he's not going to be so swift to let players walk if after they have a good season, and they're going to do a better job of reinvesting the funds for the players that ultimately leave them. Jason Maxwell then asks a realistic prediction of finish, and then assuming the number six signing actually happens, I've reported that it's expected to happen this season and Vines, but that seems to be a given. Mark, if the Rapids sign a number six this week that is as exciting for us as the other moves that the Rapids have made, what is your tentative prediction for where the Rapids finish? Do we see a home playoff game back at the Richard this year?
Oh, wow. Why do you give me the hard one? I had my spreadsheet open, Matt. I could have given all the answers you just gave, and here you are giving me the... I am going to go... right now, I am feeling fairly optimistic. And, you know, unfortunately, that means that I'm going to, like, give an answer that feels a little hedgy right now. But if I were to pick right now, with a few moves still to go and a little bit of uncertainty still there, I'm going to say fifth. I could even be convinced that we could finish fourth. And the reason that that's hard is because there's a lot of other MLS teams that haven't done anything. By the way, there's a great piece on The Athletic by Jeff Reuter about Minnesota United and what a hot mess they are in the offseason.
Things could be worse, Rapids fans.
Oh, things
Chris
are really...
Armas wants to be here.
Yeah,
Jordy Mihailovic wants to be here.
Right.
No one wants to be in Minnesota.
They had a presumptive, if you haven't been following, they had a presumptive coach who was with them who wound up signing with a USL team instead because I think the USL team gave him a 2-year contract and Minnesota wasn't willing to give him any more than one. that's a really weird situation. Also, Minnesota apparently has basically made zero moves in the offseason, even though last season's team had a very strong foundation. So that's the exception, not the rule. Most teams in the Western Conference are making moves, making good moves, hopefully improving. A few teams look like they are devolving. Other than Minnesota, you could look at Portland, who look like they're losing Jimmy Chara after having had a season when he was the only thing that was holding that team together. Seattle is kind of on the downslope as a team, although they just made a big signing that might turn things around for them. The LA Galaxy have been floundering for years. LAFC.
Dennis Bowanga, what's going on with him, Mark? Like,
there's rumors about him going abroad, right? Like, there's most of the Western Conference seems to be doing little or getting worse, but that's not going to stay. We're going to hear some big moves in the next month, and some good things are going to happen. You know, of course, LAFC went out and got Hugo Lloris, former goalkeeper for the French national team, and I think Lyon, as well as in a couple of teams in the Premiership. Was he with Chelsea? I feel like he was with Chelsea.
Hugo Lloris was Spurs, Rabbi.
Spurs.
Yes. So other than Harry Kane, the other least Spursy of the players are one of the good eggs in that regard.
One of the good eggs. Anyhow, long story short, these Rapids have built things back. Before they got Sam Vines, I was thinking that Jordi Mihailović took this team to like seventh. But now if the Sam Vines signing happens and Sam plays the way I think he will be a big addition to this team. And there are very few holes left in the roster that aren't strong. And there is even a few spots where we are, dare I say it, too deep. We've got some backups who will do yeoman's work if the starter is either injured or needs some rest time. So I'm very optimistic right now for like fifth and possibly higher.
The other good thing, Mark, from a preseason standpoint is that everybody who's signed so far to date, with the exception of Jasper Lofelsen, who is reportedly back in Germany and is sorting his green card, everybody else is physically here. Whereas you saw even moves that were made in early January by the Rapids, you know, Connor Roden came in and was with the club by the start of preseason, but Andreas Maxo is a late addition. And I think Alex Gersbach was with the team for like a week leading up to his ignominious start at Seattle Sounders. So most of the guys are in here. So you figure Lofelsen will be, you know, here in a week, you know, in a couple of weeks, a month at the absolute latest. And the only other guy who's arriving potentially late is the number six. So like, the team has a chance to gel. There's still a lot of new pieces, and that start of the season schedule wise isn't super easy. So we'll see whether or not they get off to a slow start. K Fitz 85 asks a thought I had. There was a report midseason about a complaint filed about MLS teams and their facilities. Rapids were rumored to have been one of those teams. Jay Crispy, I can confirm the Rapids were one of those teams. Did this impact the big offseason? Did Apple step in to avoid bad looks on the broadcast? I don't know that Apple stepped in, as in like Apple was saying like, hey, Rapids, fix this. I do believe there was some stuff from a programming standpoint, particularly around that. And then the protest in which they were, again, similar to the club, gave a filtered version of it or cut away from some angles and then only briefly mentioned some things and then didn't acknowledge the existence of the elephant in the room. I don't know that this big offseason was affected by that report. I did get it confirmed at Media Day earlier today by Porrick Smith that the club has replaced two grass pitches and two turf pitches in the greater facilities around at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. You'll remember it was this time last year that they were settling in the new stadium pitch that was set up that was original going back to 2007. That original pitch was was installed when Adama Traore was in diapers, and then that same grass was the grass that he tore his ACL on. What this would have been the end of 2022. So there's now five relatively new pitches. The recent weather notwithstanding, it's been a much more mild winter now for Colorado. So maybe those pitches are in a better preseason setup as we come out of, you know, the end of February and into early March than certainly the stadium pitch was come that Minnesota game, in which the club honored Joan Dobrinsky, and Jack Price then came on for 7 minutes and then tore his Achilles. How much of that was the club doing it voluntarily versus being forced by Major League Soccer due to a potential MLSPA investigation or complaint into that? I don't know the details of that, but in any case, this is something the club is addressing directly. The practice facilities should be better. They should be safer. They should be higher quality. And given the iterative knowledge that the club has gone into based on what installing the new pitches in the new pitch last season with all the winter conditions, those new ones should be better maintained for that. That leads to a better facility. It's unfortunate that it got to this place. It's unfortunate. It basically took the professional athlete equivalent of an OSHA violation in order to have this. But if it leads to the club being able to be in Colorado longer for preseason because those pitches are withstanding the harsh Colorado winter, then I am here for it. And if it's a safer, better pitch to where the team is healthy and fit and not picking up injuries as they fall on the hard turf in, you know, February, March, April, maybe even into May, then the club is better for it. Rabbi, I will throw you a Ask HGHL that we got from Matthew Schmiman. Matthew, I apologize. I need to meet with you in person, and I need to get you to record you saying your last name so that I can get this accurately. But in any case, Mark, he asks, in spite of all the positive hype around the new signings in midfield, goalkeeper, and on the wing, I can't help but still see striker as a particular weakness. If Rafael Navajo, goes down and we're left with Yapi, this whole roster rebuild could be for nothing. Am I overreacting? Mark, 21 games are going to be played in league play before the loan and then the option to buy expires on June 30th for Hafa. Mark, how important is it for Navajo to hit the ground running? And then if anything happens to him, do the Rapids look for something else, or are we reliant on Yapi to get out of his yips? And how much of what's happened this offseason is setting up to where Navajo has a proper support team to have him succeed in ways that he was on center back island last year, just starving?
Yeah, our options, if Navajo is not ready to go or is hurt or for any extended period of time, are pretty weird, right? Like, it's Darren Yapi, who didn't score last year, but maybe he was snake bit and he's got 5 or 10 goals in him in relief duty here because he was just unlucky last year. Or maybe the team has to go with some sort of like 4-4-2 twin cam engine with Ryan Galvan and Kevin Cabral kind of coming out at angles, which is not ideal. Also, your occasional reminder that Jonathan Lewis still is on this team, although I don't know why. But he might wind up becoming a productive player for this team this coming year. And the other possibility is Calvin Harris, of course, who I think took some really nice strides last year and had some really nice moments. So, but yeah, I would be really worried if Rafael Navajo is not healthy for any stretch of time. In fact, I would say backup striker is kind of the position that we really should be going for. There are a few players out there who really ought to be in consideration. One player who hasn't been signed and I know is looking for an MLS team is Albert Diqua. Diqua is the reigning USL Offensive Player of the Year. Last year he scored, I think, either 15 or 16 goals for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, who ran away with the Eastern Conference in the USL. Diqua is a really kind of like jackknife, can do it all striker type player. He attacks the box. He poaches really well. He can dribble drive, and he has some really nice headed in the box ability kind of. So that kind of player is the kind of player that I think Colorado should probably go out and get. They're just, you want a guy with a little bit of experience with athleticism and physicality. But that's my take, is that the Rapids, I think, need to go out and sign one more player. And he needs to be a kind of Albert Diqua or like a Christian Ramirez type player, a guy who Everybody else is kind of forgotten about, or their profile is as a backup. Will Bruin, the Dancing Bear, is another kind of player like that, a guy who you don't expect to lead the line, but can do the job. Or if you go throw back a little, you go with Alan Gordon, a guy who will give you 90 minutes in a pinch, but you should really rely on him for 15 here and there. I don't think Yapi is that. I think Yapi is still a guy who is 1 year away, and I'm afraid that Yapi might be perpetually 1 year away. But I think the Rapids probably need to make a small move for a small player, the kind of way they got Jasper Lofelson, who is not a linchpin critical player to the success of this team, but is important and will help this team overall. You know, with something between 1,000 and 2,000 minutes, and will be beneficial. That's the kind of guy they need to go and get. If they don't go and get that guy, and they're expecting Navajo and Yapi with maybe some help from Calvin Harris to pull things, I might feel guilty. I might feel dumb about having suggested the Rapids are finishing fifth this year.
I would love Christian Ramirez on this Rapids team right now, Mark, coming off the bench or playing a couple different roles. I think Wilfred Nance and Columbus would be absolutely stupid to let him go, given what he did in the playoffs. So, yeah. Can I interest them in Miguel Navarro? Just straight swap. You get a backup left back, and we get your best attacking super sub as well, just in case Navajo doesn't work out. Mark, how many goals? Again, 21 games will be played. So the Rapids are at LAFC on June 29th. That is MLS match number 21 for the club out of 34 on the season. And then the next day, June 30th, is when the loan expires, and presumably the option to buy for the reported $4.5 million expires. Mark, in 21 league games, how many goals do you need to see from Navajo to warrant him being worth $4.5 million?
For sure, 10. I mean, I was
going to say that's the over-under for me. If it's 15, yeah, write the check right now.
Well, so, like, if you look at the best strikers in football worldwide, and specifically even in MLS, like, that kind of like 0.5 goals per game number is like the low watermark. The better players, it's got to be like 0.6 to 0.8. And the really good players, you know, I mean, like the Erling Haalands of the world are scoring at a 0.9 or above rate. You know, they score almost every game. But Haaland, you know, pads those numbers by scoring three or four against Burnley or Middlesbrough, whoever else is in, you know, they're just dismembering and decapitating from week to week, the Royal Antwerps of the world. But yeah, that's you know, half a goal every other game in 21, that'll get you 10, and that's good.
Last question. We had a few people, Mark, ask us about the number six position. So to your point, Rabbi, backup striker is an interesting conversation, but Sam Vines secures the left back position, and then the number six would be there. And then at that point, Mark, we're at 30 guys, unless we're assuming that two of the drafted players who are with the team right now ultimately sign next pro contracts, or we see a Jonathan Lewis, a Lalas Abubakar, somebody else leave the club. At that point, we're looking at roster compliance and how many international roster slots and everything. So a few people have asked about the number six position. Mark, the indication I've gotten is that they feel close. They've had a few targets they feel close to. Nothing is leaked, unlike some of the other stuff, just yet. So maybe nothing super close to where that's come out, because agents and other people can't resist once things get over the line. I and others, Mark, have heard rumblings that it is likely to be an international player or a player from outside the league. And then you combine that with Max leaving the club, open international roster slot, open U22 slot. Potentially that would make sense, and that would be the one position to go all in on for a big swing, given all the other stuff that is set up. Let's make our risky move for a guy with no MLS pedigree at the position where he's got the center back and the goalkeeper surrounding him, Connor Rona next to him. All the other stuff around him is solid and reliable and a known quantity. I've heard a few people say this. DNVR has been on this for a while, Mark, about bringing back Kellen Acosta, and I since have heard that this is an HTHL exclusive, listeners. I haven't tweeted this out from me. I haven't tweeted this out from Burgundy Wave, that the club is interested in Kellen Acosta. I haven't been able to narrow that down. I don't know if Kellen is looking at options in Europe. I don't know if there's other MLS teams that have made bona fide offers that are more than what the Rapids could mark. Mark, I right now, for the amount of money that Acosta was making his peak for the Rapids, you put him in there next to Connor Ronan. This midfield is set. It affirms that Porik is acknowledging his faults and letting Kellen go in the first place. Kellen was playing at his best, I think, with the Rapids. That got him into the national team. He was at his best, happiest, and living his best life with the Rapids. He won trophies, but wasn't necessarily the reason behind it for long stretches with LAFC. That being said, things really soured with the way things ended and the mixed reporting around what Kellen said in terms of what ultimately led to him departing the club and options he potentially had in Europe versus what Porik Smith said that. But in any case, Mark, are you team bring Kellen home? And number two, any other idea where the Rapids could be looking at for a number six or a free agent that you saw in Football Manager 3 weeks ago that you think would actually in IRL be a viable option at this position?
You know, I'm smart enough to not play Football Manager because I would probably be so critically addicted to it that I would never be able to do anything, you know, like get dressed in the morning. My take is that they're done at that position. And the reason that I could be wrong, and I'm totally happy to be wrong. I don't think Kellen Acosta makes a lot of sense for this team, both because of how things ended with him, but also because of, you know, his kind of age and experience not necessarily being an asset. Remember that, you know, effectively there are five midfielders, we think, the way Chris Armas is going to line up in a 4-2-3-1. So let's say that hypothetically, and when I asked this question today in the press conference, the answer that I got was, we are not even in preseason yet. We haven't figured out what the starting lineup is from Chris Armas. But I think that your most likely four starting midfielders who have a fairly good inside track on the job are Cole Bassett, Georgi Mihailovic, Omer Fernandez, and Connor Ronan. So it gives you a fifth position, and the assumption that you're making here is that fifth position is a defensive midfielder. But I think the other possibility is that some of those other midfielders that I mentioned are going to pinch in or play a little bit more inside, and what you need is a speedy winger either on the left or on the right who's going to be your outside guy who's going to bomb forward. And they have three of those guys, right? They have Kevin Cabral, they have Brian Galvan, and they have Jonathan Lewis. So going out and getting another midfielder who will fill the position of kind of a, you know, a clunkier, more defensive midfielder, tough in the tackle kind of guy, seems possible, but also seems, you know, not that likely to me. There were a few ideas that I kind of, you know, threw up against the wall. The one that kind of most came to mind was like a guy like Junior Urso or Felipe Martins, who are both with Orlando City, at least right now. Whether that's a likely, you know, but those kinds of guys, you know, a kind of a veteran player. But they, those are basically like, that's basically like, you know, saying the same thing of like, you know, a Kellen Acosta. So my guess is that they don't get that guy. Jasper Lofelsen is the other guy that we're talking about. And between the eight guys I mentioned, they're pretty deep at midfield, and I feel pretty good about that. And the big worry for me is at backup striker.
The one thing that I will say, Mark, and again, I haven't been able to sort out a number. I haven't been able to... I spoke to someone who, when referring to the club's top choice when it came to a player from abroad at the number six position, is that there was concerns about the timing of it, and that maybe that the Jasper Lofelsen signing is a stopgap in that we have him for the start of the preseason. Again, he's a depth option, as others have been reported, but then that it might be easier to get that top target from abroad in the summer. And then so like they're okay for right now, but then they'll be golden come the summer if they're able to acquire that players in ways that the Rapids were more aggressive this time last year to ensure that Andreas Mexo and Alex Gershbach, both of whom were out of contract in the summer, that they got them at the start of the year rather than waiting for the summer. So I'll agree with you, Mark. I think they're mostly happy from a roster standpoint, assuming that Sam Vines is official sometime this week. But I do think that they do want to get a number six. I don't think Lofelsen is meant to be that for sure, signing, and they do want to make a splash similar to Omer Fernandez, Jordy Mihailovic, Sam Vines in terms of that signing. And we'll see that I've been able to confirm that there's mutual interest from Kellen Acosta. So it's possible that Porrick Smith called Kellen's agent, and then Kellen's agent texted Kellen, and Kellen told him to kick rocks. I'm going to Europe finally. So we'll see. But if it is the abroad option, there's maybe some more complexities or holdups, and it would be easier for them to get that player in the summer. So if the primary transfer window closes, listeners, and the Rapids haven't signed another clear holding midfielder and everything, don't lose hope. There'll be other options, and stuff for European players and other clubs get much easier in the summer than they are necessarily in January due to the MLS schedule being different. Mark, this podcast is going to be 2 hours long. Let's get out of here. We talked for way too long. Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag on the socials, using the hashtag AskHTHL. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are working on the other platforms as well. They are difficult, and still there's clear evidence that regardless of what's going on from a certain person whose name starts with E and rhymes with lawn is doing, that Twitter is still the primary place where most of the Rapids community is based on. If you want to get at us in long form, Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. $42 for the year, $5 a month. And if you buy now, that gets you in on the merch that is already in production. Listeners, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Holding the High Line. Happy MLK Day. Happy, by the time you're listening to this, Sam Vines back day. And we will see you next week as the Rapids land in Mexico and have more preseason festivities to discuss.
Peace.